Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is your host, Brandon Scher, and you are listening to the New Heights Show on Education. The New Heights Educational Group and Corporation promotes literacy for children and adults by offering a range of educational support services. Such services include assisting families in the selection of schools, organization of educational activities, and acquisition of materials. We promote a healthy learning environment and enrichment program for families of preschool and school-age children, including children with special needs. The New Heights Educational Group offers support to all students, whether in public schools, private schools, charter schools, or to homeschool students. On this week's episode, I have chosen to talk about a topic that I have taking quite an interest in, and the topic is ESL, English as a Second Language in American Schools, and ways in which foreign language students are being taught in the United States. Visit us online at www.newheightseducation.org or contact the New Heights Educational Group directly by calling 419-786-0247. You can also email us at newheightseducation@yahoo.com. Please remember to push follow us for updates on upcoming shows, or you can visit our website to see host bios and keep track of your favorite hosts and all of our shows. Here are the following announcements from the New Heights Educational Group for this week. Off, a special thank you to everyone that attended our 10th anniversary celebration. A special thank you to Taco Bell of Defiance for the donation of 6 $5 gift certificates. A special thank you to Family Video of Defiance for the donation of $5 gift card. These were raffled off during the ceremony. A special thank you to the Civic Theater of Fort Wayne for sending Maggie Clifton and Adam Fletcher to our 10th Annual Recognition Day celebration. They put on a wonderful presentation on set, design, and costumes. So thank you to everyone who attended this special event. John Paulding Days will be held July 8th through 9th. The New Heights Educational Group has been invited as a local nonprofit to be a food or game vendor. We are looking for volunteers to see if anyone is interested in setting up a game or food booth at this event as a fundraiser for our nonprofit organization. Please reach out to us if you're interested in attending. And also, New Heights Educational Group has several radio shows apart from mine, and the first one is Victoria Lowry's show. That is every Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Priscilla Sheeran's show on Sundays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Shannon Williamson's weekly show, who pre-records a story time, and my show, which airs every Friday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now back to today's show on ESL in American schools. So ESL is a very popular program in the United States. And with 40 million foreign-born residents currently in the U.S., 17% of whom have entered the country between 2005 and 2012, English as a Second Language programs are booming in public schools. The National Center for Education Statistics cites an increase in students speaking a language other than English at home from 4.7 million in 1980 to 11.2 million in 2009. Students who are learning to speak English are called English language learners and often are referred to as ELLs. Students who qualify for ESL programs are between the ages of 3 and 21 and are enrolled in either elementary school or secondary school, were born in another country and do not speak English as their native language. Their English proficiency skills prevent them from accessing the grade-level curriculum and correlated standardized tests administered each year. And, you know, I have to say from personal experience, there are actually many students in ESL programs that were born in the United States, but whose parents chose to use the first language that they taught to the students to be their own native language, and these students are having difficulty understanding the English language, and they are taking ESL classes in school. So it's not necessarily just for students who were born in another country, but it's also going for students who are born to foreign parents or immigrant parents who chose to use a language other than English as the first language of the child. When foreign-born students first enter the school system, they are assessed for their current level of English language proficiency. Families are often given a home language survey to establish the child's native language and the language currently spoken at home. Instructors will also conduct an informal interview with a student in both English and the native language, if possible, with a parent present if needed be. A formal assessment, such as the Access for English Language Learners, will be administered to assess the student's skills in the areas of reading, writing, listening, and speaking. So at the beginning, a student is definitely giving a test or some sort of an assessment to, you know, see what their skill levels are and how well they understand the language before they are put into an ESL program. So it can go both ways. The students can either be placed into this kind of program, or they will not need to be in an ESL program. So it depends on the test and how the school feels the child is doing in the English language. Students who are English language learners participate in appropriate programs of language assistance, such as English as a Second Language, High Intensity Language Training, and bilingual education to help ensure that they attain English proficiency, develop high levels of academic attainment in English, and meet the same academic content and academic achievement standards that all students are expected to meet. The percentage of public school students in the United States who were English language learners was higher in the school year of 2012 and 2013 than in 2002 and 2003 and in 2011 and 2012. So definitely the number of English language learners is increasing and the programs that are being offered in schools are expanding. In 2012 to 2013, five of the six states with the highest percentage of English language learner students in their public schools were in the West. So these include the District of Columbia and six states, Alaska, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Texas. 10% or more of public school students were English language learners, with English language learner students constituting 22.8% of public school enrollment in California. 18 states had percentages of English language learner public school enrollment between 6 and 9.9%. These states were Arizona, Arkansas, Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Kansas, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New York, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, Virginia, and Washington. In 12 states, the percentage of English language learner students in public schools was between 3 and 5.9%. This percentage was less than 3% in 14 states, with West Virginia having the lowest percentage at 0.7%. So ESL students, which also stands for English as a Second Language, typically need additional resources and support to adjust to the various linguistic complications of learning a new language. As a result, ESL students typically require additional funding. So the school must receive federal funding in order to be able to accommodate these ESL students and to be able to offer these kinds of programs. But unfortunately, public schools are coping with reduced funding due to the economic recession, and educational experts are debating whether the best approach between balancing school budgets while caring for each child's language development. In an effort to save costs, some schools and states have created mandatory full inclusion programs, where ESL students are immersed in a regular paced English class with students who are fluent in English. So this strategy reduces the cost of ESL specialists while still engaging ESL students in an atmosphere for learning. So basically, students who are learning English as a second language are put into the same classroom as the students who speak fluently and who consider English as their native language. So what does this really mean? Well, this technically means that in one way, the school is saving money and is, you know, not using as much funding as they would for ESL classes. But on the other hand, this is also hurting students who are trying to learn English because they may not be able to be at the same pace as a student who has known English since they were born. And it's also a problem for teachers because they have to work at a pace that is not only up to the standards of English speakers, but is also not leaving behind the students who are ESL learners. As the Multicultural Educational Journal explains, the 2001 national mandate, No Child Left Behind, required that all public schools help ESL students become English proficient, as both fluent and ESL students are mandated to meet state and national achievement standards. While public schools are legally required to provide educational support for ESL kids, many experts assert that the current approach is both ineffective and flawed. As the number of minority students is rising each year in the United States, experts predict that by the year 2020, at least 50% of school-aged children will be of non-English speaking backgrounds. With the current and rising statistic of both non-English speaking students in public schools, leaders assert that all schools must take a more active approach to protecting the instructional support for these non-English speaking students. Furthermore, as Inside Higher Education supports, quote, during turbulent economic times, educational programs that serve culturally, linguistically, and economically diverse student populations may be at a disadvantage when competing for reduced funding with programs that serve conventional mainstream student populations. As many schools are forced to lay off teachers in large class sizes and distribute more responsibilities among the current school staff, many educators fear that the ESL students will be left behind. So many think that because not enough funding is given to these students, that they will not be able to necessarily be on the same level as they should with their peers who are English native speakers, and they feel that these kind of, you know, budget cuts may in fact be and cause major problems for ESL students. For example, California is one of the many states implementing the full inclusion classroom approach, requiring that all public schools instruct classes solely in the English language. This approach, which is titled Proposition 227, provides ESL kids with $50 million each year for additional English tutoring support. However, these students are forced to engage in fluent English classes, even if they have never been exposed to the language before. This proposition, like many full inclusion programs, is not solely designed to save school budgets. Moreover, all of the propositions for full inclusion have the backing of experts who assert that the best way to attain language fluency is through inclusion instructional methods. While full inclusion has research and studies to support its intensives, many leaders still argue that there are better ways to teach both ESL and English-speaking students through non-inclusion practices. Personally speaking, I have to agree in some way with full inclusion because I do think that the best way for a student or anyone really to learn English or any language really is for them to be fully immersed in that speaking environment. So if a student wants to learn English, then they should definitely be put into an environment where they are surrounded by English speakers. And I don't want to necessarily say forced, but are kind of, you know, made to have to talk to their English peers. And I think that this is a great way to definitely allow the student to learn English quicker and faster and more efficiently because they are hearing the language themselves. They are able to communicate with their peers themselves. So rather than sitting in front of a dictionary or sitting in front of a workbook and completing exercises, they are taking the hands-on approach and they are being exposed to the language themselves. And I do think that definitely one of the benefits of inclusion instructional methods is that it allows students to be in an environment that kind of, you know, allows them to learn a language because they have to. They have to know how to communicate with their peers. They have to be able to understand what the teacher is saying, and they're kind of, they have no other choice but to learn a language. So is inclusion really the best approach? One of the biggest arguments against full English inclusion classrooms is revealed through the studies that assert ESL students adopt fluency more rapidly when engaging in specialized language support programs. In addition to the argument that specialized support helps to increase ESL student learning, many educators and parents argue that the additional ESL support helps to maintain the challenging environment of a fluent classroom. Specifically, as a regular paced English class is designed to instruct students who are of an average English speaking proficiency, immersing non-English speaking students in such classes often forces teachers to slow down the pace of instruction, making the overall challenge of the class less rigorous for English speaking students. For example, when a teacher in a regular paced history class assigns a research essay on a specific topic, let's say the U.S. Constitution or the Founding Fathers, the teacher may strive to accommodate his or her instruction and support to all students with needs, including language, learning, and cognition needs of both ESL and fluent students. Subsequently, as students work through their research papers, the single teacher's ability to support each child becomes more challenging. The more children and special needs there are in each class, the less specialized support a single teacher is able to offer each of the individual students. While various experts fear that inclusion programs diminish the educational opportunities for both fluent and ESL students, many leaders and parents disagree. According to Education Week, while support programs are in many ways essential for ESL children and families, many believe that separate setting instructional methods, which involve separating ESL children from fully fluent classrooms for the entire or partial class period, inappropriately creates an environment of segregation. In fact, as Education Week reveals, many new ASL programs are currently being evaluated by protesters who assert that the separate setting methods are a violation of the federal civil rights laws, as public schools are required to provide equal educational opportunities for all students. Some believe that these programs only stimulate increased cultural bias, as they do not provide opportunities for students of various and diverse backgrounds to interact. Some protest that special education and ESL programs have undoubtedly made substantial progress, but that it is time now to move beyond unequal separate systems to integrate ones where all students have access to all the services necessary for their success. So I do have to agree in a way that when students are placed, ESL students, when they are put into a classroom of English native speakers, that it does create a problem for teachers and instructors because they kind of have to slow down the pace of their learning, and they have to not only think about the regular students, but also accommodate and be able to work on the same level as the ESL students. And I do think that this often creates a distraction, and this is often negatively reflected on students who do speak English and who are able to learn at a fast pace. And, you know, I do think that this is definitely one of the main disadvantages of including ESL students with native speakers. I do think that in a way, when students are not included, when ESL students are pulled out of the classroom, I do have to say that this is definitely a form of segregation, and I do understand from personal experience how ESL students may feel neglected or may not necessarily feel as equals because they may, you know, be self-conscious and they may be, you know, frightened of being able to speak in English because they feel as if since they're being pulled out of a regular classroom and since they're not able to, you know, learn with the students who are English speakers, that they may feel segregated. And I do think that this is definitely a big problem of having separate ESL programs in schools because students may not feel as if they are equal to their peers who are, you know, fluent in English. So I definitely think that these are some of the different sides that you can see of inclusion. And I do think that definitely the best approach is to have ESL students be present in some of the classes with, you know, fluent English speakers, but to also receive necessary help or necessary English tutoring when needed. I also do think that it is important that schools do not do the full inclusion method where ESL students are kind of forced to speak English all day, so that they are given different programs or that they are offered different classes at some time during the school day to not only have them be immersed in the full English atmosphere, but to also have a chance to, you know, work with their ESL peers and to kind of be in that environment as well. So I do think it's definitely very important for schools to consider these different measures and for parents, most importantly, to be aware of their child's progress and where their child stands in the English language. So definitely, and definitely, you know, teachers must also be, you know, aware that there are ESL students in a class, and they should also be, you know, kind of working at a pace where they're not leaving anyone behind, and if needed, that the ESL students are taken out or are, you know, brought into another classroom when necessary if they don't understand something, but definitely not to make them feel as if they are segregated or as if they are below the other students or to feel neglected. Because definitely coming into a new country and learning a new language and being surrounded by children who have been speaking English for their entire lives is, you know, a difficult task, and it's definitely psychologically difficult for a child, especially if it is an elementary school student who may not be necessarily used to any of it, And, you know, it's hard, and it is important for schools and teachers and parents to work together to make sure that a child is feeling comfortably and at the same time is learning English and is not feeling as if they are being segregated or neglected in any way. So for the final, you know, topic that I want to talk about today in ESL is bilingual education versus ESL. And I found this topic quite interesting that there are actually two different programs for learning English. And the first one that we're probably most familiar with is the ESL classroom. So in an English secondary language classroom, students who teach many different languages are all taught by the same teachers. The teacher only speaks English and is not required to speak the native language of any members of the class. In ESL classes in elementary school, non-English speaking students are generally taken out of their regular classroom for a period of time to learn English. In middle and high school, students take an ESL class in place of an elective. All teaching is done in English, and students sometimes feel singled out and awkward when pulled out of regular classes to go to their ESL class. And this is also what I talked a little bit about today, that when students are put into an ESL class and when they are kind of forced to go to that class when the rest of the students and the rest of their classmates are in, you know, in a different class, it does become awkward and it does become, you know, very negative for the student. And I do think that it is important that schools work together with teachers and parents to make sure that students are feeling comfortable and are not feeling that they are basically taken out and are, you know, being neglected simply because they don't understand the English language. So in contrast, in a bilingual education classroom, all the students in the class speak the same language. The teacher also speaks the language. So for example, if the language is Spanish, all of the students in the class would speak Spanish, and the teacher would also speak Spanish. The way that a bilingual education class generally works is that the teacher teaches in both English and the student's native language, eventually switching over to teaching only in English. The switchover is done gradually to give the students time to adjust. Bilingual classes are also geared more toward having the students eventually speak both languages fluently and to hold on to their culture. Both ESL and bilingual education classes are a good way to learn English. Students from both do well learning the English language. In public schools, which class you take will most likely depend on which resources are available in the school. So also, you know, it depends on the funding of the school and how much the school is given for the ESL program. And, you know, I definitely think that, in my opinion, a bilingual education classroom is definitely a great alternative to ESL classes, and I think maybe they're even better than ESL classes because students are learning with their classmates all the time and are not necessarily pulled out of a classroom when they have to go to their ESL program. So I do think that a bilingual education classroom, to me, is definitely hold more of a great advantage than an ESL class because students are all working together and the teacher is gradually introducing the English language into the scenario and is, you know, at the same pace because the students are all learning the language together. So I do think that if I had to pick one, I would definitely say that bilingual education classes are definitely more at an advantage than ESL classes because they allow the student to not feel singled out and not feel as if they have to go to a specific program just because, you know, they're forced to by the school to learn the language. But here they're all learning together and, you know, they're helping each other learn. The teacher is speaking both the native language and English, and I do think that this is definitely a great alternative and a great way for students, especially in public schools, to learn English. And some of my personal tips to learning a foreign language, and specifically English in this case, is to definitely watching movies and films in English, preferably with subtitles, to hear the language and to, you know, hear the social conversation interaction by the person who is learning the language. Reading books in that language and, you know, definitely beginning with children's books and gradually moving on to, you know, higher levels. And, you know, I don't think there should necessarily be any shame in learning and using children's books to learn a different language because, you know, I do think that from personal experience, this is a great way to learn a new language and it's definitely a great way to improve your beginner skills and to gradually move on to higher reading levels. There's also a lot of great apps. I know I talked about Duolingo in a few of my earlier shows. Duolingo is a great app that allows students of any age to learn really any language, not only English, in an interactive way. And they offer a lot of languages, including English, Spanish, French. And I would definitely recommend that anyone who has the chance to take a look at it. And most importantly, I think to definitely socialize with native speakers, to take advantage of the opportunities that are offered in your area, you know, whether locally or at a school or at a community college, to take the opportunities such as meetings or joining a sports team or really, you know, any kind of activity that will allow you to be able to communicate and socialize with English language speakers. To, you know, practice your own skills and also to hear and to see how people are communicating in that language. So definitely think that these are some great tips that you can use in learning a new language. Not, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be English, really any language out there, whether you're, you know, either an ESL learner or you are trying to learn another language, like Spanish or French or German, these are definitely some great tips that you can use to practice with any language and in polishing your linguistic skills. Thank you to everyone for tuning in to this week's program. I really hope you enjoyed this week's topic. I know that I definitely learned a lot of new information along the way, and I hope that you guys enjoy this topic. And this was definitely a very interesting topic to do. And, you know, I hope to continue doing more of topics that are focused on learning a new language. Thank you once again for tuning every Friday in with me. Have a wonderful rest of the day. And, you know, happy July, everyone. Have a great day, guys. Bye.